Welcome to the Motherhood Village podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Gonzalez Cumberbatch, and I know firsthand that it takes a village to raise a child, but most importantly, that it takes a village to uplift a mother. A mother's village is necessary and can take up many forms. Consider this podcast as part of your Motherhood Village. No matter the season of motherhood you're in, every conversation will give you more tools to add to your parenting toolbox, and you'll feel supported, inspired, and uplifted. So let's get into an informative and empowering conversation. Good morning and welcome to the Motherhood Village podcast. I am on with Dr. Eric Nash, who is a developmental and behavioral specialist specializing in autism, ADHD, and related disorders. He is the founder and president of the Support for Students Growth Center in Boca Raton, Florida, and the creator of the College Life Skills Program. How are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. So nice to meet you, Nicole.
Great to meet you and talk finally on the podcast here. I always like to ask my guests to tell me a favorite book of theirs or one that you would like to recommend to my audience. I'll start that out first here.
Love it. I am a visual guy. This is called One Small Starfish. I received this from a parent 21 years ago in 2003. And what it is it focuses on a mom telling her story about her baby that was born with multiple exceptionalities. And as the child starts to develop already, they were able to see that there's some deficits going on, some difficulties. And this boy was diagnosed with ADHD, speech and language disorders, sensory integration. And at that time, what was called high-functioning autism, which would also go in the area of Asperger's, or today it's called autism spectrum disorder level 1. And the whole story focuses on this mom who just wasn't going to back off. She was going to put a team together. She was going to learn everything she could about what she could, about her child's needs, and about how that all transpired and moved forward. It was very inspiring and helped me as I entered my PhD program back then.
That's awesome. And actually, that's a good segue. So my next question is, you're the founder of the Support for Students Growth Center in Boca Raton, Florida. What was your inspiration, I guess, going back of getting your PhD and why focusing on the neurodiverse community like ADHD and things of that nature, Asperger's, autism? What was really the inspiration for starting the school?
Well, basically what it is, and just to make sure that we're all on the same page, it's not a school. It is hourly services that we offer that are done. And of course, we'll touch on that. But as to the why does this exist? Why did I walk away from my past life and decide to do this back in April 12th of 2012? And it was because I worked 17 years in the Palm Beach County Schools district. I was in charge of different things and being in charge of special ed in the school and different things. I also taught at Lynn University. I was working over at Florida Atlantic University and very involved in working with our neurodiverse population. And I just found that, you know, the schools for the most part are great about teaching education, how to do the math, the science, the reading and such, but they're not always exceptional with the methodology and what the specific needs are of the individuals, especially when it comes to social perceptual, autism spectrum, ADHD type of categories. So back in 2009, I received my PhD focusing on autism education and interventions. And the intent was to be able to open shop, was to be able to open up something, to be able to bring a bunch of counselors and therapists and behaviorists and so on, to be able to offer the services that the schools weren't able to do. With our College Life Skills Program and with our Support for Students Growth Center, which is our corporation, our business, and then the College Life Skills is one of our programs, we focus on four main areas. And that's the social executive functioning, the life skills, and the emotional maturity. And these are all things that became very clear as I was going through my career that there's not enough being done. And even before that, when I first started 32 years ago, I have a hard time getting that out because I don't see myself as somebody who's, you know, in that coming up on 60 years old. So is that there was just, I worked in psychiatric hospitals. I worked with kids, young adults and such that just needed more care than they were going to be able to get not being in a facility. And then I went on to do other things and got involved in the school district and behaviors and stuff. And it was just too much that was missing. So that's why we do what we do here.
There's a lot to unpack there in the sense of now that my son is in school, right? So I see how, and my husband and I are having talks of, you know, as he gets older and the kind of school we want to have him in, do we want something to really provide the life skills more so than to your point of just the math, science, English, right? Like what else are we are providing our child? Now you focus on the neurodiverse community, correct? Can someone go there who is not though? And maybe talk to me about why you chose to work with that population of kids. And is it open to, can anyone go if they really need a need to have that? Because I would imagine something like college life skills is something I wish I would have had before. I wouldn't have changed my major like six times. So talk to me a little bit about that, about who you serve and why you serve that population.
Our services are not limited to those neurodiverse. Many people out there, their children, and we go from ages five well into the 20s, just to kind of paint when I say their kids type of thing, don't have diagnoses, but they have characteristics. They have stuff ADHD-like. They have stuff that may be, you know, something that's related to spectrum or learning disabilities or things of that nature. And it's not about diagnoses. When we do what we do here, everything starts with an initial consultation with me. And it's a whole process to evaluate where they're at to see if there's a need. Before that, I talk with the parents for 15 minutes before they even come in, before anything, to see if we could possibly be a good fit. If I'm talking to, you know, a particular parent and they're telling me their elementary, middle, high schooler is so disorganized and they're just not finding stuff and they're doing the work, but they're not handing it in and they're waiting till last minutes to doing things, but they don't have a diagnosis, they're still a good candidate for much of what we're doing. Now, when we put our services together, the only service that we do in groups is the social skills. And that's because we have 14 groups that we do, and we put them together based on age, ability, and need, not just age. So it would be, you know, what is specifically what the need is. And with all the services, we could go on for hours, and I have, but that's not what we're about today. It's about a little snapshot, kind of give you some idea of where we're at. So
sure.
Short answer.
Go ahead.
The short answer is no, you do not have to have a diagnosis, but you have to have a need. There has to be a specific reason that you want to learn the skills, the strategies.
Sure. And can you talk about then maybe the different ways and the services that you provide to help families? If I have a, let's say even my son, right, six, or anyone listening to this in the South Florida area, walk through the process and how might it go? And you mentioned, you know, kind of having not an interview, but like an application process, I would imagine you talk to the parents, are we a good fit? So maybe talk to me about what that looks like. And then once they are in the program, what they can expect.
Wonderful. Everything that goes on here starts with the parent giving a call or an email and going, I want to know more about your program. I have two people that handle the phones. Francesca is my assistant, office assistant, and Paula is my office manager, also known as the office goddess. She has been my wife for the last 30 years, and she runs the front end and all of that. It starts with setting up a 15-minute phone or Zoom meeting with me, to be able to, what's going on? What's happening? Give me a snapshot as to, you know, is this possibly a good direction to go into, or is it something different than what we do? If it is something that is within our wheelhouse, then I explain the process to them, which is very, very cut and dry, but very different because parents don't usually go through it. So it starts with, we set up our initial consultation. And what will happen is I will meet with the parent or parents and the child or the young adult in my office, if possible. If they're distant from us, which many people are, then we can do virtual, just like this. And during that time, I'm going to be doing a functional assessment. Now, it's not a diagnostic tool that you may go to a psychologist or a neuropsych or somebody for. It's a way for me to get a snapshot of what's going on, what's their ability, where are they at, what are we looking to do. Half of the meeting will be, I will be talking with that potential client, with the candidate, and with the parents in attendance, because I don't have a relationship with the kids already. And I need to be able to see what is real and what isn't, what's perceptual, what's reality. So I will talk to them about their interests, their likes, their social, their this and their that. After about half of that meeting, then the child goes into another room, young adult. They're supervised if they need be. We have Daisy, who is our certified therapy dog here. She is a 30-pound golden doodle, and she will hang out with those who like to be hung out with dogs, which are the vast majority. Then I'm going to talk to the parents for the rest of the time, or whoever else they bring in. I've had them come in with their BCBAs. I had one with their education attorney. I've had, and teachers and this and that. So I'm open. And during that time, I'm going to go through much of what I talked about with the child, but I want to get the parents' perspective on it. What is this? What is going on behind it? Once we get done with that hour and a half, I'm going to give the parents a little bit of my initial feedback, but then I'm going to take the next week. I'm going to go through my functional assessment. I'm going to go through, I require that the parents do an online application. They do an executive functioning checklist online. And then if they have any documentation, an IEP or a 504 from school, if they have an FBA that was done, if they have a psychoeducational evaluation or a neuropsych or anything else that could be relevant, I tell them to send that to me also. So now in my planning after the meeting, I go through my functional assessment, I go through all their documentation, then I'm going to put together a 7 or 8 page report for them. It's very simple, clean cut. It is part one. What are the goals and objectives I could identify based on our interaction and the data that I have that we need to help the young adult or child be working on in whatever area, social, emotional, and so on. The second part is, what am I recommending as far as services? Am I recommending one or more of the programs that we have offer, including parent support? Or is there something that, you know what, I really suggest that you go to another particular professional? For speech language, occupational therapy, speech, you know, whatever the case is where there may be something else, maybe they really need to go to a psychiatrist and have a medical evaluation done. That will be included. In the report, I prioritize. So let's say there's one or two services that I think really are a need right now. That would be under the priority services. Then I would have secondary. These are other things to consider once we get a handle on this stuff. All the finances, everything are black and white. There's no surprises. I tell the parents, I will email that to them once I'm done. Once they have a chance to go through it, discuss it with whoever they like, give us a call back. We're going to set up a 15 or 20 minute phone or Zoom. I'll answer any questions about the objectives and the goals. And then we'll look at the other part with the services and then get going from there.
So in essence, are you working in tandem with or with a school that they're a part of? Because like you said, you're not a school. So if a parent came, you're in essence working with, okay, if they're getting their English, math, and all the things that they have to get educationally, right, whatever their school system is, and then they come to you either off hours or, I guess, talk to me about that since you're not a school, what the time frame would be like. And then, because you mentioned finances, so is this something that can be, that parents can get through like a scholarship? Are there grants? Is it, you know, talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, I'll go with the finance first, because that's always a huge factor, regardless sure. of where you're at in life. We are considered an educational company. So we're not mental health. We're not medical. Insurance does not cover any of what we do. Even though I have licensed mental health counselors on board, I have a psychologist on board, I have BCBAs, insurance won't cover it by the dynamic of who we are. And one of the most positive parts about that is I don't have anybody who doesn't know your child telling us how we should treat your child, which is one of the essential things I needed when I started doing this. As far as from there, would you restate the last question? I got distracted. I did that. That was the other part that I got ahead of.
Sure. I was saying, do you work in tandem with the school? So school. Basically, okay. Yeah.
All right. So as far as that goes, we are not part of another school. However, most of our services are done after school hours, from 4 o'clock until about 8 o'clock. For those who are in school, that they can do our services here or virtually or whatever the case is, we will always work with other schools. We will, most of the private schools in the area, we have very good relationships, many private schools outside of the area. So, you know, there's a particular issue going on in the school. They're not quite prepared for that. We'll work, go on meetings with the parents, with the guidance, with administration, and we'll help to navigate those areas there. Parent consent, of course, for everything. So that's a part of it. Also, a big part is that there are more and more children, young adults that are being homeschooled today. And that's another huge part. And many of your college kids today, college young adults, are doing it virtually, or they're taking online classes. So they're not limited to only after 4 o'clock. So I'm basically in the office from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday. That's what I signed up for. That's what I committed. That's what I love to do. And the different people that work for me, you know, have different parts that they do. So we will work with whoever it is that the kid is, the young adult or a child is working with. And it's very powerful because I need to hear from the classroom teacher what's going on, not just the parent's perspective. You know, it's very, and I was a classroom teacher for many, many years. You know, I was on both sides of the desk with being in charge of, you know, different things of what can be done and can't be done. So when we go to an IEP meeting or a 504 in person or virtually, and it's like, well, we can't do this, we can't do that. It's like, oh yeah, you can. And this is how you go about it. So it changes the dynamic quite a bit.
You almost become like an advocate for it sounds like, for the family to really help, especially for those children who need a little bit more. I think all children, especially when you're starting, like you need someone in your corner, right? Whatever that might be. It's a new dynamic, whether you are on the neurodiverse spectrum of things or not, you know, having someone advocating for you and really helping the parents, I think is key. Because to your point, I think even the teachers are kind of stuck of knowing what they can do, what they can't do. They have how many kids they have to be in charge of, you know, and it's I think the fortunate part, though, to your point with the homeschooling, they're like, there's options, there's different things, right? There's centers like yours that now more people will know about due to the podcast, of like that there are options out there. I want to talk a little bit about your background. Now, I know when I read briefly in the bio and when I put it in the show notes, it'll be a little bit more in depth. But you, like you mentioned, teaching, coaching neurodiverse individuals. What are common challenges that you've observed, right? And you said that the center's been open since 2011, I think?
2012.
Uh-huh. 2012. Particularly in the transition to college and young adulthood, like what are some of the challenges you've seen and how do you hope to address them and hope that these individuals, when they leave the center, like really what's your mission and hoping that they take with them, particularly in the skills development section? Like I said, I know for me, you know, I changed my major so many times. I had the Bright Future Scholarship. Looking back, like I wish I would have had even for someone like me to kind of help guide me, kind of like this is what I might expect. So maybe talk more, I guess, my question is for the college life skills portion, like what do you hope that when they leave the center that you're like, okay, my work here is in essence done. The mission is complete. I hope that they leave doing XYZ.
Okay. So as far as the college life skills program, that specific part, it was created about 3 years ago officially. We've always had it in place where we're helping those young adults transition into the college world. But what happened is when COVID came around and changed the world, everything got much more complicated. You know, the kids, the young adults weren't in structured environments. You know, the whole, especially that first year was just not good on every level. So it was helping the kids to be able to, where to go from here, how to move forward. One of the things that became very, very apparent is that as the young adults, say 14, 15, going into college age, there became a huge addiction to technology. And it was just everything that was, virtually everything that was going on, it was to the tech. Hide behind the screens. They're doing homework, but they're really playing video games or chatting or things or doing things that aren't safe. And the parents, you know, have to live their lives. They have to work. They have to take care of other kids. They can't be sitting there 24/7. So the college program very much, you know, goes back to those young adults that we find that I've worked with who academically are in decent shape. Some of them are in fantastic shape. They're super bright. They've got it. But they are having difficulties with socializing. You know, what to do on Saturday when they're not in class. Playing video games until 5 a.m. and then missing classes, putting assignments off. You know, they may be 16, 17, 18 on the outside, but emotionally they're a few years behind. And they have to learn how to do that. And many times, you know, by no fault of anybody, the child hasn't developed the life skills that they need to be able to move forward. They haven't learned how to take care of their own laundry. They haven't learned how to cook proper meals and not just throw ramen in the microwave. They haven't learned how to use technology safely. There's these areas of being naive and taking risks unknowingly that can lead to negative areas. And then being able to advocate for themselves, being able to communicate. You know, you mentioned before about us being advocates and such, and I just wanted to comment on that. I don't see us as advocates. I see us as consultants. When we sit around the table as an advocate, it gives that connotation of here to do battle. And, you know, we're not here to do battle. We're here to be part of the team, part of that solution. And that's one of the reasons why I love this book that I mentioned before, is because it talks about that team. So back with the College Life Skills Program, we have the technology addiction. The way we deal with that, and I'm going to answer it that way, if you're okay with that, is we want the young adults to learn how to use timers. There's nothing wrong with using our technology. But we don't want to be totally dependent upon it. And we don't want to be, you know, 3 hours into doing something when we only plan on doing it for 20 minutes. And I have another story to go on with that about myself personally and TikTok that I don't use anymore. You know, how to plan their day ahead. How to be able to, when they go to bed, this is what I've got going tomorrow. Instead of waking up and, okay, well, what should I do? You know, replacing old behaviors, replacing these behaviors that lead to anxiety, that lead to fear of how to replace those. You know, when it comes to the social, you know, many of our children, especially, you know, elementary, middle, high school, have spent a lot of time with the same group of kids going up through the years. And they're kind of, you know, they're part of that. Unfortunately, many kids also get themselves shunned, where their peers start moving away because they're growing in these areas and they're not quite so much. So helping them learn the skills to and the strategies to be able to get involved in groups and clubs and learning how to read social cues, learning how to understand what's the thought and intention? What did so-and-so mean by the things they said? How to read when they're in somebody's face and the people like back off, or you know, their friend is telling them about a new puppy they got. And they're not responding to that. They're talking about their Legos. You know, and the friend feels like, you know, I'm not being heard. Also with the weekends. The weekends is such an area in college that has led so many people to calling us and others to be able to do something. Because kids don't always know what to do. It's like, all right, I don't have class on Saturday. And I'm really not connecting with others. And what do? They stay in their rooms or their dorms and they don't get a whole lot done instead of enjoying the college process. We want our kids, neurodiverse or not, to not just go in and succeed and get a diploma, but we want them to learn how to be successful, independent human beings who are enjoying this life that they're blessed to have. You know, on the weekends, taking physical action, being able to learn how to relax, play games, be with peers. You know, how to live in a dorm or an apartment with others. There's a term that I use that I'm sure I stole from somewhere, but I can't give them the credit because I don't know who it is, called roommate etiquette. You know, if you use something, put it back. If you do something, clean it up after. If it's not yours, don't touch it. If you and your roommate, you know, or dormmate are on different sleep schedules, or if they're studying, to be considerate with them. So those are some of the main areas that we really focus on helping that going into college. And, you know, it's real exciting because right now we're in that time of college acceptance and those young adults who have been applying are getting their letters. And I have a young lady who has neurodiverse issues, and we've been working with for a bit, and she just got her acceptance to UF. And she's like so excited, but we've been working on the other things that she needs. She's got the academics. It's about that other stuff. And she still needs support, and she's going to need some support while she's there. So, the team is all working together on that. So it's very, very exciting to be part of the solution.
I love that. And I think when you mentioned the social aspect, like I even think like we expect kids to kind of go off to college, and it's like, yes, and they're going to have it figured out 18 years old. But to your point, think of all the minute things that we think of as minute, but how impactful they are. So like you said, I didn't even register, and I went to FAU, so I stayed local, but of that aspect of what do you do on the weekends? What do you do? And then now with the impact of social media, that maybe you see all your friends here, but you're not getting invited, and maybe someone joined the sorority, the sports team, and the anxiousness that comes from that, meeting new people. Can you share maybe some tips to a parent listening to this? Maybe they don't truthfully have the funds to connect with someone like you or another place. Can you maybe share some tips that you're like, listen, parents, if you have someone that's in middle school, high school, possibly about to go to college, here are some things that you can do at home right now to try and get them prepared for somewhat of that experience. Can you share?
I think without a doubt, I think the most challenging part with having a child that is neurodiverse or having some of these issues we're discussing that are really potentials for growth is helping the parent get past the point of it's not my kid. Or, and this is the one I get from the dads a lot, and I love you dads, they'll grow out of it. And, and there are some things that they will grow out of. But if your child's getting into middle school and they're not able to expand in their executive functioning, they're not able to adapt and transition between situations, they're not keeping track of the things that they need to be doing, that's something you need to get on, whether it's with a professional or educate yourself and do it, because they're not going to magically pick it up. They're going into middle school and they don't have it going. It's not going to happen like that. So I think for parents, it's educating. It's getting past that denial or, whatever we want to call it. I know it's a yucky word for some, but it's the reality. And being able to look at where your child truly is, not where you wish them to be, where they truly are, and learn what kind of strategies they need. Because we all learn from what we see others doing and think about and hear. All right, this is how I'm going to do it. You and I both were ready for this Zoom this morning. All right, there were a bunch of things we had to do on our end to be here and make this happen. So we want them to learn how to prioritize. We want them to be able to make lists and to follow through with those. We want them to be as independent as possible. Parents for all healthy parents want their child, young adult, to be happy, healthy, independent, and not have to live in their house someday. Yeah. They're usually invited back, but we don't want them to have to come back when they're in their 20s and their 30s. We want them to be able to have that life. Modeling is huge for parents. Don't just tell a kid, don't be on your phone all day if you are. I'm sorry, that's just a really bad message. That's not going to get the desired result. If the parent is really good with making lists, all right, teach the child, hey, look at the list that I put together. Let me help you learn how to do that, how to be able to put that together. Self-regulation is a huge one. Being able to put a moment between our thoughts and our actions. For some of our neurodiverse population, it's really, really difficult. Neurologically, their wiring does not lead to, and that's a big part of executive functioning, which is a massive part of what we do here, is to be able to regulate, put a moment between the thoughts and the actions, teach them, how to visualize being present. I love the expression, be where your feet are. Be right here. Don't be worried about tomorrow and next week. And, and that's be present. Some grounding techniques, how to be able to center themselves so they can be in the moment instead of out there scattered, when it comes to initiating, starting things, being able to plan and prioritize and organize, all of those basic strategies from executive functioning are the things. Now, a parent who perhaps, you know, this isn't the way for you to go, but you can get a little information from here and you can do some. I would educate myself about executive functioning, because almost always, regardless of whatever else is going on, executive functioning is an area for opportunity of growth, if you will. Identify from the 8 or 9 areas, depending on who you're asking, of executive functioning, which ones are my child having the most difficulty with? Then go to the teacher. Go to the teacher and say, I'm seeing that Bobby is having a real difficult time with being able to be organized. Because not only is it in school and he can't find stuff and be prepared for stuff, but he's doing the same thing at home, because it usually is. So ask them, what are some things that you can do that I can help you with at home so he will be more organized at home in school and be able to go in that direction? And there's just so much. There's so much. I did a webinar a couple of weeks ago, and it was with parents and others about the different things for the College Life Skills Program. And it was just a blip, but there's so much information out there. Educate yourself. It's not usually going to go away on its own.
I think education is one of the reasons why I started the podcast. I felt like you only know as much as you know, right? And I instantly found after becoming a mom that as equipped as I thought I was, you know, high achieving corporate career, all the things, my husband and I, we hit all the check marks, and I had difficulty, right, with my own parenting journey and starting off. So I said, whoa, how are, you know, single moms doing this? How are families who can't really afford certain things doing this? So it really started from the education piece, because I do and hope and take that everyone who listens to my podcast episodes takes one little nugget of information of something. And I think one of the things, or two of the things that you said, and this is going to lead into my final like major question with you, but I think education is key, and you try and do what you can. And number two, I think that the modeling and self-regulation is key. I do know for maybe a mom or dad listening to this, I understand how things, you know, we get up, we have to go to work, and it's a constant train, you know, but sometimes we got to kind of stop and take a breath, because to your point, our littles are watching. And from what I've read and all the things, I mean, I'm only a parent of one and it's only been 6 years in, but a lot of the books that I've read and a lot of the experts I've talked to, a lot of it goes down to modeling. If you have to try and model the change that you want to see, and expecting our children at 18 that you just send them out without adding some of these, to your point, life skills that maybe you could be adding the minute they turn 5, the minute they turn 6. I'm a big list person. So I was like, oh, let me include my son in travel lists. And he was like, why are we making a list for travel? And I was like, well, it's important to remember. So now he's like, get so excited about making a list, right? So I think there's little points where we can add it. But to anyone listening to this, I know it can be overwhelming when you're trying to get the, you know, food on the table, the bills paid and all of that. But sometimes it just pays to slow down. Now, you mentioned the executive functioning aspect. That's going to be my last question for you. Can you explain what it is and what are some of the deficits when you refer to executive functioning? Like, I know you mentioned that a few times. Talk to us about what that is and some of the deficits and why you feel it's so important.
Excellent. I love that one. I'm glad we were able to go there. Executive functioning is basically how our brain operates to help us move through the day as we go through. I like the analogy, and my wife was an executive secretary many years ago before she got into other things and memory care, and then I wooed her over here, and that was bad. Anyway, so... Hey, human being here, one leg at a time. All righty. So with that is, as an executive secretary, her job was to keep the people, the executive she was working for, organized. What to do, when to do it, have everything ready so they can sit in and get going. In our neurological development, that is the objective of the frontal lobe, is to be able to help us plan, organize, follow through, initiate, and so on. Depending on who you ask, there's between 8 and 9 different main areas. And I'd love to touch on those real quick. The first one is inhibition, being able to control, put a moment between our actions, being able to regulate how am I feeling, what's going on. The second one is self-monitoring, being able to track our own behaviors that may impact others. That's a, as you would imagine, somebody who's having social difficulties, not being able to regulate when I said something and it upset somebody, or they were really excited about it, and you know how are they reading it? Being able to shift, you know, shifting is just very simply being able to transition between one of activity and another, be able to go from playing on the video game and then going and taking a shower, from coming home or waking up in the morning. This is the worst one throughout all the ages for the most part. You know, get up in the morning at such and such a time. We have to be in the car by this time, and to be able to get moving. Emotional regulation, you know, goes along with the inhibition, with being able to put a moment between our thoughts and our actions, how to do that. Then the initiating, just getting started, you know, and anything that we do starts with a thought. All right, I want to pick up my iced green tea here and drink it. I have to have that thought of I want to have something to drink, you know, so how am I going to go reach over there and not disturb me from what I'm doing here and not wear it on my lap? So I have to be able to, multiple things are going on at that same time. Then we have working memory. Working memory is one of the things that caused the kids of all ages and adults to have the greatest difficulties in skill acquisition and being successful in environments. The working memory is when a teacher says, I want everybody to take out their finder, their binders, take out the worksheet from Tuesday, take out a pencil, and do problems 1 through 10. And that's the verbal order that's given. Now, our child has to remember the binder, the pencil, the worksheet, do problems 1 through 10. If they miss any of those, if it doesn't register and they forget which problems to do, or they don't take out their pencil, or they forget which worksheet it is, any of those is going to impact their ability to be successful in doing a task. And that extends right over to home. It's not just limited for that. Planning and organizing. This is another one that is just so critical, because some people, and no offense to anybody, some people don't have great role models when it comes to being planning and organizing. We do our best, but some of us don't aren't really strong in that particular area. So we have to teach them how to be able to put systems in place. And the reality of everything that we do here is about systems and strategies. How to task monitoring. All right, I'm doing something, and we have an assignment, a project that's due in 2 weeks. How do I take that and break it down into manageable pieces? How do I chunk that? How do I make it realistic? You know, I can tell you stories of stories and many others, you know, in college and waiting to the last minute and staying up all night and, you know, all these crazy things that weren't very effective, but you know, I didn't have that skill set at that time. And, you know, the task monitoring and then organizing the materials. As far as what parents can do in executive functioning, because that, you know, is one is chunking the tasks, like we said, break stuff down, even if it's as simple as I need you to clean your room because grandma's coming over. All right, break it down. This section, this needs to be done. That needs to be done. On Tuesday, I want you to spend 15 minutes putting this away. On Wednesday, 20 minutes doing that. The next is creating systems, habits, and routines. Those systems, habits, and routines that are children, teens, young adults are learning are lifelong skills that they're going to take with them, you know. And when they become mommies or daddies, or if they don't, whatever the case is, they become spouses, whatever they're going to be doing in and out of the work world, they have to be able to be successfully in creating systems, habits, and routines. And when those habits don't work anymore, or those routines don't work anymore, is to be able to adapt and to be able to change them. And then lastly is, well, a couple of things, breaking down the directions. Many of our kids have difficulties with, here's the directions, here's what to do, and it's overwhelming. It's just too much. So, you know what? We can rewrite it. We can use different kind of highlighters. We can put an A or a B or a 1 or 2 next to the first part. Let's do the first part. Let's do the second part and teach them how to do that themselves. Making checklists and ultimately write it down. One of the most critical things, whether we're doing it in tech or we're putting it in a notebook of some sort. What goes in our mind, our brains are used to process information. Not the greatest on storing information. Storing information, you write it down. I could think of numerous times, and I know I'm not alone, where I had an idea about I wanted to do something or whatever, and then poof, gone. I'm like, damn. So now I keep track of these things. I have a folder in my phone. I have different little notebooks I use for different things. And you know what? It's made my marriage a whole lot better because, you know, we're able to communicate. This is what Wala needs to do at a certain day and time. This is what I need to do a certain day and time. So very helpful.
You said so much and amazing information, and two things before we kind of part ways here. One, I love the quote, and I had been looking at that a couple of times because behind you, the secret to change is to focus all of your energy, not on fighting the old, but on building the new. And I think that's beautiful. I think it beautifully states what I feel in talking to you now for the last almost 45 minutes of truthfully, that's, I think, the secret to change, right? Of like really building the new. Let's not focus on, you know, fighting what was or what we can't control and all the things, but to your point in building the new and whatever that might take. Number two, it sounds like we need to have Life Skills Center for parents and adults, because a lot of what you're saying, and I like if I could take anything from that, because truthfully, again, it goes back to molding. So I'll say this very quickly. My son has this leprechaun project. He's in kindergarten, everyone, due Friday. We got the paper, I think, last week. I've had it on the board sitting in the kitchen. I have this big blackboard that I write like lunch, my meal prep stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this thing is due Friday. And immediately I wanted to be like, oh, we got to do this. And I'm like, well, take it back, talk to him and say, listen, mommy and daddy kind of really screwed up because it's really our job at this age. He can't remember that he has a project due Friday. He's six, right? He's worried about like all the other things. This is really my husband and I to model and to say. So I'm like, we have to finish this in 2 days. We'll do the best that we can. But I was starting to get into my like, oh my gosh. But to your point, when I got it last week, it's up to me to have been able to break that down. But of course, it's life and all the things. So as you're talking, I'm like, oh, I'm like, yeah, how many parents probably in hindsight, or as their kids getting older, like a lot of this, back to your earlier point, has to go with the parents modeling and trying to instill some of these things as young as six for him to understand. So I owned up to it and said, listen, buddy, I'm sorry. We got to knock this out. But he also has homework. Like it's a lot for what these kids have to do at six, I think is a little too much, but it is what it is. Okay. So he's got to finish his homework. He's got to do his sight words. And now we have this like leprechaun box we have to create. But as you were talking, I'm like, gosh, we need life skills for adults, because this goes hand in hand to your point. Even if you're not going to have children, it's all the life skills that we take to be successful at our jobs, to be successful just in society and in working with people. So thank you so much for sharing that. I think it was a perfect way to end this. So my last two questions for you: how can people connect with you? I'll put it in the show notes, and then I always end with like a final thoughts. If there's someone that had to listen to this and you're like, listen, if you listen to anything I said, take away this from it, I'll give you the floor.
Beautiful. All right. So as far as connecting with us, the name of our company is a little lengthy because it's our email address, and it's support for FOR studentsgrowthcenter.com. I would have done it a little differently if I had that insight. Support for studentsgrowthcenter.com. You can also email at info@collegelifeskillsprogram.com. All right, those are the easiest. Our phone number at the office here is 561-990-7305. And we're on all the social medias and have been for a long, long time.
And I'll tag you. So then, yes, your final thoughts. If you're like, all right, we're going to end it, this is what I want parents to take away with.
I think there's a couple things. I think going back to what our mission is, all right? Our mission is to help neurodiverse students and non-neurodiverse students and their families learn and use strategies to identify and achieve their career and life goals. So it's about learning all that stuff. Parents, if you're not sure something's going on with the kid, you're not quite sure, don't wait for them to grow out of it, all righty? It may happen. The odds are not real good. Go with your mommy senses or your daddy senses. You know, they're not quite connecting with the other kids. They're having a time following through on stuff. Their attention and focus is a little off. You're getting phone calls from the teacher that they, you know, he's disturbing class or not getting his work done or something. You know, reach out to somebody. Most schools today will have people, you know, guidance counselors, special education departments. You have needs to say, hey, I'm wondering about this. This is what's going on. Yeah, give me some direction. Share your thoughts with me. The teachers are your first great defense. They are, so to speak, they are with your child, you know, 30 hours a week or whatever it is. They see what they're doing. They see what they're not doing. Definitely would utilize that. One of the other things, which kind of separate that didn't get touched on, is over the summer, we're going to be doing all of our programming also, which is we're going to be doing intensive social skills, which will be real compact for a week at a time. We're going to be doing our college life skills, which is usually a one-on-one, but we're going to be doing that in an intensive group setting for those who that would be of value. And then also executive functioning, which is just such a passion of mine, which I'm sure you could pick up on. We're going to be doing intensive weeks on that also for all the different ages and stuff. I will talk to anybody, 15 minutes free, no charge, no strings, no nothing. You got a question, a thought, you don't know exactly what's going on. You know, please, I have the experiences and everything I do because it was gifted to me. Let me share that with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Nash, for coming on, for the work that you're doing, for the different programs that you have, and yeah, continued blessings to you and for your company, for Love and Light.
Thank you for listening to this impactful episode of the Motherhood Village podcast. Subscribe to my show so you'll never miss a future episode. You may also rate and review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with someone that can use it as part of their Motherhood Village. Remember, your village can take up many forms and you do not have to do it alone. Connect with me at themotherhoodvillage.com. Blessings to you for love and light.